Hello, friends. Welcome back to episode 33 of the Hypermanic Noise podcast. I'm your host, Douglas Harvey, the bipolar rock and roller. And today we're going to talk about life in the funny farm. I've talked about this a little bit on the show before, and it's something that not a lot of people have had an experience with, but Jesus Christ, do you get some stories in these places? And but before I get to that, I'm going to start it off with a clip. Now, I found this morning. It's fantastic. Being a former Christian, you know, when you're a Christian, you've got to find ways to preach, to share the love of Jesus. And I guess one way to do that's by swinging. So let's learn about the Lord while swapping partners.
Dean and Christy Parave are devout Christians, but they've found an unusual way of spreading God's word through swinging.
If I was a priest going to a swingers club, would you listen to me?
No.
You got a better chance of listening to me spreading the word of God, being another swinger, still a sin.
You got a better choice of listening to me spreading the word of God if I'm spreading your wife's legs.
It's just, how are you using it?
I feel like right now this is God's plan.
Swinging to me started at...
I don't know if this is important or not, but the women in this are more manly than the men. Just a side note.
As a lifestyle. And then it was like, you know what? We can do a lot of good with this.
Jesus Christ, this
Instead
bitch is ready
of, you
to
know,
swing.
Like, just, let's just have fun with this. I'm getting to people that probably never will even visit a church. What I think about being the devout person is, hey, God's not going to put a line with a bunch of elephants. So what's he going to do? He's going to put a swinger with a bunch of swingers to spread his word. Simple as that.
What the fuck?
Today, true to their word, they're talking about the Bible with their latest swinging partners.
People are like, well, you know, you're supposed to be a Christian.
The wife of this dude, the main dude, looks like the husband of the second dude. So, fuck, I'm puzzled, but anyway, let's learn about the Lord.
If all the swingers are sinners, what's the best way to talk to the sinners?
By fucking them.
Join them, right?
Or you could just chat to them.
In the Bible, there are so many gray areas.
Yeah, it says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, but what if your neighbor wants you to?
However, the path to both swinging and religion has been a long one for the couple.
I'll bet.
11 years ago, before he met Christy, drugs and alcohol were ruining Dean's life.
Before I got clean, my life was a living hell. I got down on my knees and
I bet you did.
I prayed to God. I'm like, please help.
As well as finding God, Dean also found exercise.
Yeah, he also found steroids, let's not forget that.
Almost every time I go to the gym, I talk to somebody about God. So, until that stops, I'm going to keep going to the...
So this fucker, he annoys everyone at his fucking gym about God. He goes to swingers parties and all they want to do is fuck and he wants to talk about God. This guy's the worst swinger of all time. And I think if Jesus was alive, he'd be wanting to fuck and he'd be like, hang on, dude, settle down. Let's get banging.
Dean married Christy in July 2007. The two share their faith and love of working out.
Fuck me.
But swinging wasn't
Christy
initially
looks like
part of their relationship.
Christy looks like a white Yoel Romero from the UFC.
This couple came up to me and asked if we swung. And I used to dance all the time, so I thought they were talking about East Coast, West Coast swing. Yeah, I had no clue what swinging was.
Yeah,
and their first swinging experience came as a surprise for Dean.
I came home from work one day, and she happened to have a female friend there. And I get in the showers, you know, start showering after work, and next thing I know, they're both in the shower with me. You know, I didn't know what
was going
on.
That sounds pretty good, not going to lie.
But soon the swinging lifestyle became a part of their marriage.
The Bible doesn't talk about swinging, specifically.
The Bible doesn't talk about going to the gym either. The Bible doesn't talk about driving cars. The Bible doesn't talk about the internet. The Bible doesn't talk about airplanes. The Bible doesn't... You fucking retards.
I just feel like as a married couple, you agree on something together, then it's okay. If it's not, then like I said, Judgment Day, I'll find that out.
Fair enough. There is no God, so it doesn't make any difference.
To help connect with more people.
If I could go to the next swingers event and get 10 people to believe in Christ, my job's done.
And they've recruited help running the site from close to home.
Working with my mom on a sex website, it is a little different. I am not...
Okay. So, you're fucking deluded enough to think that you're swinging to spread the word of God. Now, you're not. You're just swinging to get laid. I got no problem with that. If you want to do that, fucking have at it. But don't do this shit. And now you've dragged your daughter in to build your fucking website, you cunts.
Currently involved in lifestyle, it's never a non-possibility with my other half. But you have to develop certain rules and you have to get to a point where you're both trusting on many different levels.
Now they've found their vocation. Dean and Christy plan to keep going till God tells them to stop.
Well, so far today, God hasn't said, hey, Dean, stop this, it's a sin.
Well, that's because if you hear the voice of God in your head, right, that's called psychosis or paranoia, or you're schizophrenic, or you're BPD and having an episode. So this is actually funny that this is this guy is leading into the topic of mental health and psych wards. So without knowing it, he's got us right there.
I don't want you to do this. Till he does that, I'm going to keep trying to help as many people as we can.
Oh, fuck off. Trying to help people. You're getting your dick wet, man. I got no problem with it. Don't fucking lie to me, though. So that was an interesting point he said. I want to go back to that.
And to keep going till God tells them to stop.
So far today, God hasn't said, hey, Dean, stop this. It's a sin. I don't want you to do this. Till he does that, I'm going to keep trying to help as many people as we can.
Okay. So we could also say that God hasn't told the fucking pedophiles in the Catholic Church to stop, and that's why they don't stop. Why? Because there is no God. Hello, everybody. Let's get into the topic. So today's show is a guide to surviving the nut house. Now, I hope that anyone listening never has to go. I really do. But if you do go, you got to learn some shit. And I say this, I'm recording this in the nut house. This is my fifth stint in my short 32 years. And I'm not going to get into the specifics of why I'm here this time, but there's a lot of contributing factors. I'm going through a lot of shit. And maybe bizarre to you guys to be listening to my voice. I sound quite upbeat because that's what I'm striving for. I have bipolar disorder. I have ADHD. I have PTSD. I've got a lot of acronyms going on. I've grown up with abuse. All this sort of shit, all right? And this makes damaged individuals. And what happens to damaged individuals? Well, we tend to fall apart at a certain point because you realize that you can't function the way you've been raised isn't healthy. It's not a healthy way to function. It's not a healthy way to behave or react, you know? Growing up in an abusive household, you learn to express anger through violence. And that's not cool. It's okay to be pissed off at someone. It's okay to say, dude, you're a fucking cunt. But it's not okay to punch them in the head because they're a cunt, unless they're hurting an animal or a child or something, in which case set them on fire. But should you find yourself in this position, you wake up and you realize, oh, I'm in the funny farm. What do you do? What do you need to know? Well, for starters, they're going to take your phone cords away. They're going to take your mouse cord. They're going to take your computer cable. They're going to take, funnily enough, they take so anything cord related is gone. And then they have to test and tag it because we live in the occupational health and safety world. So I have, my mouse cord has been tested and tagged. My Zoom record has been tested and tagged. My aux cord's been tested and tagged. My mic cord has been, my headphone cable has been, my... Every fucking thing that you could imagine has been... I'm surprised I didn't test and tag my fucking dick. It's that ridiculous, man. But so you come in, and the first time I went into hospital, right, they took all the cords off me. My phone charger cable was about 20 centimeters long. It wouldn't have fit around my neck. But they left me with my belt. Smart. So I want to talk about bad psych wards and tell you some stories and basically teach you how to navigate this shit. So you find yourself in a psych ward, you find yourself in a bad one. Unfortunately, it happens. And what are you surrounded by? Well, if you're in a public clinic, you're surrounded by crack addicts. And you're not surrounded by crack addicts that want to get better. You're surrounded by crack addicts that are there till their next paycheck so they can get more crack. Does that create a healthy environment to get well? Well, surprisingly, no. The first time I went to a hospital, it was at Charles Gardner Hospital in Perth in a ward called D20, which no longer exists, thank God, because if you've ever, not that there's a God, but if you've ever seen, American Horror Story, The Asylum episode, D20 is fucking 5 degrees off that. My room flooded with sewage. There was a guy in there who can't have had a shower any more recently than when fucking JFK was in office. There was this really tapped guy that was off his rocker that used to just come in and lay on my bed. We had a guy called Seabiscuit, you know, because he would walk down the hallway in a Zimmer frame. He was probably 30 and it would take him half an hour to get up the hallway. So we thought it was appropriate to name him after a racehorse. These are the things, I guess lesson number one, learn how to make fun of your situation. Call it the nut house. Call it the funny farm. Make jokes with your fellow patients. Don't put anyone down. But honestly, this guy wasn't even aware. Like, they told us don't give him smokes because he'll see you smoking and ask for a smoke, but he doesn't smoke. So there was no semblance of this guy left. So we'd call him Seabiscuit, you know. There was another guy that was completely off his rocker that we referred to the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and we called him Ruprecht the Monkey Boy. If you haven't seen the movie, look it up. It's worth looking up just for this reference alone. Fantastic film. So number one, learn to laugh at your situation because it's fucking miserable. You're on meds, you're off meds, you're in group, you're talking about shit you've repressed, you're dealing with issues that are brutal. You're surrounded by people that are damaged, usually more so than you. You're trying to work out what the fuck's wrong with you. You try not to beat yourself up because you're in there in the first place. There's a lot of shit like that. Number two, don't use drugs. Yeah, sucks, right? Don't do it. I can tell you the biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges being in a mental health facility is drug use of not mine, the other people around me, because they don't give a fuck about getting better, but I do. And this is a problem. I've had people smoking can bongs 5 feet from the front door of the fucking hospital, and they offered them to me. And I said, no, thank you. I'm behaving myself. I walked inside and fucking lost it and told the nurses. That guy got kicked out. Now, I'm not somebody that likes to be a rat. It's not something I pride myself on. But when it comes to this, there are fucking rules. And I'm a bit of an anarchist, like fuck the police, all that sort of shit. But if I go to a rehab facility and I say I'm not going to do drugs, I'm going to obey my medication, I'm going to attend group, I'm going to proactively work to get better, I'm not taking drugs because that is not going to serve me in my endeavor. Now, what do you do when cunts are offering you fucking weed, offering you speed, offering you these things? What do you do? Well, it's hard, right? We walked out at the front of D20, affectionately called Hell, which thank Christ they've bulldozed it. One morning in winter, this is in 2010, shortly after my friend murdered someone and I had to turn him in for that crime, something that I beat myself up about daily. Anyway, we walk out the front for our morning cigarette. I'll get to that too. What's growing? It couldn't have been 10 feet from the front door. Magic mushrooms. So somebody had, you can get them down south in Western Australia, piece of piss. Somebody had spores for magic mushrooms. That's the only way they could have been there. It's not the general place they grow. We picked them because we're like, fuck, what are they? We looked it up. That's what they were. But we never ate them. Why? Because is there any place fucking worse to do magic mushrooms than a psych ward? Like, it's when they say set and setting for these sort of substances, that's what they're talking about. So, but just, it just goes to show how insane this shit is, you know. People will steal things from other patients, then go and buy meth, and then come back high on meth and hang around those patients they just robbed. This is the kind of shit that goes on. So something I alluded to before, smoking. Be prepared to smoke cigarettes. Basically, if you look up the statistics, it's almost impossible. It's pretty much impossible to quit smoking in a psych ward, and it's almost impossible to not smoke in a psych ward. And I could probably count on, in the ward I'm in now, maybe there's, shit, I don't know, say there's 150 people. I reckon maybe 20 don't smoke. Why? What do you think it is? We know it's killing us. Most of us are here because we want to kill ourselves anyway. So why the fuck? But it's not that. It's spheres of control. In life, we have an internal and external locus of control. And sometimes your external locus is justified. We all know some cunt that goes around blaming everyone else for their problems. Well, look, if you're somebody that has been abused your whole life, a lot of that shit was out of your internal locus of control. It was external. You couldn't control it. But what you need to do is learn to control it now. And when you're in these places, you're confronting a lot of fucking demons. It's very hard. And one thing you can control is going outside for 10 minutes and having a durry. And it's as simple as that. You know that I can go and do that. That's something I can control. I know it's going to calm me down a little bit. I know I'm going to cough my ring up. I know I'm going to smell like shit. But no one can take that from me. And when you're in a place like this, you've got coke addicts, meth addicts, heroin addicts, alcoholics, pot addicts, fucking you name it, anorexics, bulimics, overeaters, every form of issue. The thing that you need to know is that not everyone in these places is good for you. This is, I guess, rule number, what are we up to? Doesn't matter. Let's go. Rule number 17. You've got to learn very quick who the bad people are, because there's people that'll offer you drugs. There's people that you'll think are great if you don't know what to look for. You'll think they're awesome. Then you'll hang out after you get out of this place and you'll end up losing your shit because they're a mess. You're a mess. And when you put a mess and a mess together, it's just a complete clusterfuck. So you've got to work out who the good people are and who the bad people are. And it's not something I'm proud of, but I've been in psych wards 5 times. This is my 5th stint. And this is Hollywood Clinic in Perth, the best facility, the best staff, the best doctors, the best nurses I've ever come across. Fucking fantastic. But anyway, it's one of the advantages of having done this a few times is I'm very fucking good at picking those people. I met a gentleman here who's about to go to a conference and speak in Boston with Jordan Peterson and Brett Weinstein, don't want to get him confused with Harvey. Those two are considered two of the premier minds as far as the intellectual dark web goes. I met a guy that's speaking at the same conference with them in the Nut House. And also, terms like that, Nut House, Funny Farm, roll with it. You know, people that, oh, you can't say that. Fuck you, I'm in here. That's how I deal with it. Suck my dick. So I guess lesson 75. Learn from the other patients. So firstly, you've got to work out who's toxic. What I would say to you is don't go to a public clinic ever. Go to a private hospital because and this is horrible, but people that can afford private healthcare, it's not the same. You're not dealing with the same section of society. You're really not. It sounds awful, but it's the fucking truth. I'm telling you, I'm there. So we've covered a few things. Attend group. Turn up to your fucking group. If you can't, you can't. Don't kill yourself over it, but do it. If they give you a fucking booklet, look at it. Sometimes half of it's a load of shit, but there'll be one thing on there that rings true. I met this gentleman I'm talking about, he's speaking at the conference with Jordan B. Peterson and Brett Weinstein. I've forgotten. There's another bloke called Mark. And he said, if you've got 1 foot in yesterday and 1 foot in tomorrow, you end up pissing on today. How fucking profound is that, right? Think about it. We all live in the past. We all worry. We've all got anxiety about the future. And what does it do? All it does is fuck up the present. That's one of the most profound things I've learned in this stint in hospital. Did I learn it from a psychiatrist? No. Psychologist? No. former coke addict. That's who I learned that from. That's, but see, then you may say, well, old Douglas, fuck, didn't you just say to watch out for certain people? Yeah, I measured him up. I heard him in group. I listened to him talk. We had conversations. You've got to be less than 179. Be careful what you say and who you say it to. Because you never know, there's people that will stalk you. There's people that will rob you. I'm not being facetious at all. If you're in a public clinic, like I've been many times, you're surrounded by criminals. Some of them are on their way to prison. Some of them just got out of prison. Some of them should be in prison, but haven't been caught yet. And that's just the cold, hard truth of it all. Lesson 776. The food is shit. You're more than likely going to end up on more medications because there's a treatment dose and a therapeutic dose. In order to get you back to earth, essentially, the dose goes up. When you get down to like the therapeutic dose of a maintainable level and it's more normal. But in those early stages, you just want to fucking eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. There's people around here that have put on, you know, 20 kilos in a month. I, on the other hand, went to a hospital once where they took me off all of my medication at once. I lost 15 kilos in 3 weeks. To any American listeners, 15 kilos, roughly like 33 pounds in 3 weeks. It's fucking crazy, right? How did I do it? Well, it was a great weight loss technique. Basically, I vomited and shat fire for a solid 3 weeks. I couldn't drink water. I couldn't eat food. The only way I could eat or drink anything, and it was basically just liquid, was by having injections in the ass twice a day. I spoke to my doctor and said, hey man, this is pretty fucking brutal. What's going on? He said, oh, it's like coming off heroin. Well, why did you not wean me off it, you fucking moron? But anyway, this is the incompetence you got to deal with. So lesson 479.2, seek a second opinion. Always. And I think this goes in conjunction with researching medication. Too many people want the doctor to fix it. Give me a pill, make it better. Give me a pill, fix me. That doesn't do shit, right? Medication with mental health is basically like, it's like the mortar that a bricklayer would use. The mortar's useful if you know how to lay bricks. But if you don't, all it does is fucking pile up, and just become this fucking fat blob of shit that doesn't move. And that's what happens to you too if you just eat your way to death in here. If the meds are for you, they're appropriate, take them. But they're not going to fix a goddamn thing. All they're going to do is put your brain in a sphere where you have control to fix yourself. And that's the main flaw with mental health. People don't want to take meds because they appear weak. No, you don't always have to take them. Sometimes you don't. I've refused some because I knew they weren't good for me. I've had dickhead doctors put me on meds that are fatal in conjunction with other meds I'm on. Why? Because they're fucking idiots. So, research your medication. Try to eat well in hospital. Try to eat well in general. I mean, basically, I was on quite an epic downward spiral before coming in here. I'm an addict. I've been smoking more pot than air. I don't know how to deal with shit. I've got PTSD, and basically every life stress is causing a PTSD response at this point. I wasn't eating for days. I wasn't sleeping for days. Sometimes I would go 2 days without drinking water, right? That shit, it doesn't mean anything because you don't value yourself. And the strangest thing about these places is almost every goddamn patient works in an industry of service. Everyone is either a teacher, education assistant, nurse, psychologist, support worker, foster carer. I'm talking 99% of the people in here. Every one of these people spends their fucking life caring for others, and all of us, myself included, we can't care for ourselves. Work that out. It's fucking fascinating, right? I had two jobs. One job working with special needs kids at a school during the day. The other job was working with a boy with autism after hours, right? Spent all that time doing that. Then what else do I do? Do stand-up comedy, entertaining people. And then on the way home, I'm planning my suicide. And I'm not saying this to be facetious, but that's, the main thing is if you ever have a plan to harm yourself or end your life, if you ever... See, I'm jumping ahead of myself here because I'm ADHD and that happens. So psychologists, psychiatrists, they all want to say, have you had any thoughts of self-harm? Have you had any thoughts of suicide? Is that a strange question to you guys? Because to me, that's... I've had those thoughts since I was a little kid, since I was 6 or 7. I've had those fucking thoughts almost daily. But also, I work at a school. I think about punching kids in the head. I think about setting fire to dickheads' cars. I would never do it. It's just a thought, right? Sometimes I think, oh man, I can't be fuck going to the toilet. I should just piss the bed. It's just a fleeting thought. I'm a comedian, right? I thrive on weird thoughts. But they put too much weight on that itself. It's not that. It's not suicidal thoughts. It's suicidal planning. When I got to the point, and look, fuck this, right? This is embarrassing. This shit is super personal. And I'm going to keep talking about it on this fucking show because it's super important, right? I'm talking about me planning my own death, okay? This was a couple of weeks ago. No hint of irony involved. I'm saying this because people need to be open about this and people don't fucking talk about this. I got a lot of cool shit to live for and I have this line in my psyche I will never cross. I will never commit suicide. I know the damage it would do to my family. I know that I have a lot of loved ones that it would destroy. So I will never cross that line. That's built in me. It's like I will never hit a woman. I will never commit suicide. I will never harm a child. But I got to the point when my brain starts ticking, I start looking up the lethal doses of my meds. I start thinking of how I can do it without my family members having to find out because my mum's on a holiday. I didn't want to ruin a holiday. Well, what would I do so she didn't have to find out till she got back? How would I do it so that no one had to find my body? I had a great plan. I was going to go out to the Pines. Before I went, I was going to mail a letter to the cops. The day before, I was going to mail a letter to the cops. The day I necked myself, I was going to mail a letter to my partner. And then I would be dead. The cops will get a letter saying where to locate the body. My partner would get the letter saying I'm sorry and that I loved her and all that. And no one would have to find me and I would be out of it. That was my plan. Not bad, right? Oh, shit. It's fucking hard, man. You know, that's why I'm here. Because I have this impenetrable wall that I will never break. I would never end my life. But I had no control over that. The thoughts come and go. But those thoughts turned into plans. Those thoughts turned into ideas. Those ideas turned into plans. And those plans were very soon to be actioned. So if you feel yourself going on that road, who gives a fuck about stigma, bro? Who gives a fuck? Go to the emergency. Message me, Hypermanic Noise on Facebook, hypermanicnoise@gmail.com. Fucking send me an email, bro. Talk to me about it. Talk to someone. Ring up Beyond Blue. I've done it. I've rang up those crisis lines and talked to people because I didn't know what else to do. That's what we've got to do. So, right, more tips about surviving the nut house. Bring a laptop. Fucking hell, it's boring as shit. Boring as shit. Today's Saturday. What have I done today? I got woken up at 6 a.m. to have paracetamol. Why do I have paracetamol? To help me sleep. So they woke me up to give me Panadol to help me sleep. If that's not the definition of fucking retarded, I don't know what is. Look, I'm ADD. I'm going all over the place. This is something funny. I'm 32. I've just got diagnosed with ADD. You guys are listening. It's pretty fucking obvious, right? Sometimes the doctors, this is lesson 796.2. Sometimes the doctors don't know what the fuck they're on about. And I've probably seen 25 psychiatrists in my life. Most of them knew what they were on about. A few of them had no fucking idea. And had I listened to them, they could have fucked my entire life. The wanting to change a diagnosis for no apparent reason. All this sort of shit. So, look, this is another one of those episodes I'm reticent to put out. Just like the Nervous Beatdown episode. This one's a lot more upbeat. And I am hitting a lot of really important issues. Issues that fucking mean something to me. And that's why I'm sharing it with you guys. We started off fun. Swinging for Jesus. Hell yeah. Get your dick wet for the Lord. But look, I hope none of you guys ever have to use these lessons. But apply some of this shit to your life. Fuck off the toxic people. When I first went into hospital, my housemate was supposed to look after my cat. Now, I lost everything in my world. The only thing I had to hold on to was my little cat. And I went into the funny farm. And I asked my housemate to look after my cat, and I never saw her again. And somehow I forgave him. Well, no, I didn't. I just pushed it aside. And then this week I thought, that's not too much to ask of a friend, is to just please look after my cat. She had food, she had litter, she had a litter tray. She was the best cat. She never ran away. And I've decided I never want anything to do with that cunt again, because I never even got an apology. Guys, seek help. Even if you're not at the stage I'm in where you need to be in the nut house, seek help. If you're going through some shit, talk to a psych. Talk to a friend that understands. You know, my friends don't get this. They really don't. Most of them have no fucking idea what it's like in my head. Not even to any degree. But you know what? They get that they don't get it. They care about me. I've had friends, and I'm going to give him a shout out, Bruno Oliveira, guest on the show a lot of the time, coming to pick me up. He picked me up from the hospital, took me to Shakedown Studios. We recorded my first two songs of my hip-hop EP with Uncle Sam, fucking premier hip-hop studio in WA. Bruno featured on the song. Dropped me back to the fucking hospital, right? I left the USB with the song in the car, and I messaged him and said, shit, I left the song in the car, man. Can you email it to me? That motherfucker drove all the way back to slide me that fucking USB under the door, right? You can't buy friends like that. You can't. My friend Annalise come to see me a bunch of times, bought me gifts. My friends Louie, Jamie, Tegan, Trees have come to see me because they fucking care. These cunts don't need to give a shit about me. They're not my fucking family. They're not related to me, but these motherfuckers took the time to come and see me because they are fucking good people. So we need to surround ourselves with good people. I'm lucky that if all of my family deserted me, I have a family. I have a fucking great family of friends. These people, Mick Gledhill's another one. You know, Despondent Pascal, he's another one. Knew I wasn't doing well, just gave me a call. That's all. He just gave me a call. And I felt great because I knew that he cared enough to pick up the phone. Bruno cared enough to fucking drive halfway home, then drive all the way back just so I could listen to the song that night. What a good cunt. Trees, Jamie, Louie. Shout out to their band, Depravity, The Führer, Bloodlust, fucking Ritual Aura, bunch of cool bands, and their lovely partners, Trees Riot and Tegan Newton, came to see me. And, you know, when I was talking to them, I sort of shared with them a lot of stuff that I hadn't shared with them before. And I could tell it was hard for them to listen to, and it was hard for me to say. And I could tell they didn't know what to say. But what did they do? They just gave me a hug and said they love me. And that's all I need, man. Sorry. The fact that you guys keep tuning in, the fact that this show's given me a reason to live. I love doing it. And these episodes, look, man, if I sit down with Bruno, if I sit down with Mick Gledhill, if I sit down with Cameron McLaren, if I sit down with Sean Conway, or any of the fucking sick bands I've got to talk to, it's fun. I'm sitting here crying like a bitch. This isn't fun. But like I said in the Nervous Beatdown episode, this is fucking important. This is important to me, and this is important on a societal level. Mental health is the single most important thing on this fucking earth. What's the point in having the body of John Jones or Brock Lesnar if you're fucked in the head and want to kill yourself? There's no point. So I guess, guys, once again, I'm going to echo a similar message. If you need help, get it. See a psych. Speak to a friend. Email me, hypermanicnoise@gmail.com. Whatever it takes. If you're in Australia, Beyond Blue, they have a great call line which you can call. You can talk to trained nurses. And it's just an ear. And sometimes that's all you fucking need. Sometimes you just need to get it out. That's what I'm doing. Like, I've been talking to nurses about this. I've been having breakdowns in hospital. The first day I got here, the rooms are suicide proof. The first day I got here, I worked out how I could kill myself. Now, I'm not being like dramatic there. That's just my ADD brain was like, oh, they make it so you can't do that. I wonder how you could. I worked it out in 5 minutes. But you don't know. Like, none of my friends realized this was going on. And I was reaching out for help, but I was reaching out for help to psychologists, doctors, things like that, the appropriate channels. And I knew that this was beyond the scope of what my friends could help with. But now I'm here. Now I'm safe. Now I'm under the care of a brilliant doctor. Pardon me. That one thing, terrible food you got to deal with. Ugh. Now that I'm here, those needs are being met by the doctors. So my friends can help. And how can they help? By just being them. Just those guys turning up to see me. That's all I needed. Just a fucking hug and to see their fucking stupid faces. No, I'm kidding. I love them. But just to see their faces. Just to get a hug. Have a chat. Talk shit about some terrible bands. You know, have a laugh. That makes all the difference. So please, guys, find yourself good friends. I'm blessed. There is no God, there is no hell, there is no heaven, but I am blessed by Gaia, Mother Nature, luck, fortune, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Call it Thetans, like that dickhead Scientology guy. Whatever it is, I'm blessed to have those people in my life. And I hope you guys are blessed with good people in your life. And look, please, thank you so much for listening. This show is more than a podcast, man. This show is me dealing with my shit. Like, I've had therapy since year two. You know? I've been beaten. I've been abused emotionally. I've had to put a friend away for murder. My dad attempted suicide in year 12 just before my final exams. I had to put him in the recovery position and stay with him so that he didn't choke on his own tongue until the paramedics came and we thought he was dead for 4 days. I've stopped my dad attempting suicide another time. I was a key witness on a murder trial. This is just the tip of the iceberg, cunts, you know? And it's not a woe is me. It's just, hey, when you have a fucked life, sometimes you end up in the funny farm. You know, not everyone has this story. So before I go, though, let's do a couple of funnies. I got here the first day, there's this old bloke, and he says, oh, I fucking hate the bitch that runs this hospital. Why is that? She was making up stories about me, making up fucking lies. So you know what I did? I got on my Harley and chased around the hospital. And I said, what do you mean, like the car park? No, no. I rode it in the front door and chased her around the ward. So he rode his Harley around the ward of the hospital, chasing the woman that runs it, trying to kill her. Because I don't know if he said she made up shit about him. I don't know if that's true. But this is the sort of shit that goes on, man. Fuck. Oh, at least I'm going to walk out of here with a hip-hop EP. If you're a metalhead, I apologize. But hey, we got to do it. Got metal songs coming too. I'm going to walk out of here stronger, better, thinner, better looking, healthier, smarter, and more equipped to deal with the shit that life's going to throw at me. And if you cunts want any advice, please drop me an email, man. One thing you can guarantee about me is I'm probably more crazy than you. And even if I'm not, I'm not going to judge you for it unless you're the cunt that used to come in and sleep on my bed and play my guitar and fucking Ruprecht the Monkey Boy. Ugh. Even Ruprecht, if you're listening, Ruprecht, hit me up. Send me an email. Fucking, you can come lay in my bed again like old times. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks again for tuning into another episode of Hypermanic Noise. The next few episodes are going to be a bunch of metal bands. We're talking all the bands I've been interviewing recently that I haven't had a chance to get to. But now that I'm not working and in the nut house, I'm going to get to them. So what are we talking? We're talking Des Fafara from Devil Driver. We're talking, oh, fuck, man, Alien Weaponry, Amorphous, the Bjorn Strid from Soilwork and the Night Flight Orchestra, High Tension, Wednesday 13, Revocation. Yeah, some pretty cool shit. So these are going to be coming. There's going to be a couple coming up every week from now on. Stay the path. Believe in yourself. Be kind to yourself. And never give up on your dream. Never give up on yourself. And reach out for help when you need it. All right. Stay blessed. Stay black. Hail Satan.